Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Chanmarya sayato nayari taratas charte sabigat swarat. Ene brahmariya yarikavaye mayanti yasurayaha. Eja varmita mita tir sarvo mesha. Tanna sena sadani rasta kuhukam satyam param dhimahi. Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 1, chapter 15, text 41. Bacham,
Bacham,
Juhava,
Juhava,
Manasi,
Manasi,
Tat,
Tat,
Prana,
Prana,
Itare,
Itare,
Cha,
Cha,
Tom,
Tom,
Mrityau,
Mrityau,
Apanam,
Apanam,
Satsargam,
Satsargam,
Tom,
Tom,
Panchatve,
Panchatve,
hi,
hi,
Ajohavi,
Ajohavi,
Bacham Juhava Manasi,
Bacham Juhava Manasi,
Tat Prana Itare Chatam,
Tat Prana Itare Chatam,
Mrityavapanam Satsargam,
Mrityavapanam Satsargam,
Tam Panchatve hi Ajohavati,
Tam
Pachatve Tam Panchatve hi Ajohavit
Tam Pachatve Ajohavit
Vacham Juhava Manasi
Vacham Juhava Manasi
Tat Pranaitare Chatam
Tat Pranaitare Chatam
Vritya Vapanam Satsarvam
Vritya Vapanam Satsarvam
No, Satsarvam Mrityavapanam satsargam
Mrityavapanam satsargam
Tam panchatvehi ajohavit
Tam panchatvehi ajohavit
Vacham juhava manasi
Vacham juhava manasi
Tat pranaitare chatam
Tat pranaitare chatam
Mrityavapanam satsargam
Mrityavapanam
Tam panchatvehi ajohavi
Tam panchatvehi
ajohavi Vacham juhava manasi
Tat pranaitare
chatam
Mrityavapanam satsargam
Mrityavapanam satsargam
Tam panchatvehi ajohavi
Tam panchatvehi ajohavit.
Vacham
juhava manasi.
Tat
prana itare chatam.
Mrityavapanam satsargam
Tam panchatvehi ajohavit Vacham
Speeches
Suhava Relinquished
Manasi
Into the mind
Into the mind.
Tat prane,
Tat prane.
Mind into breathing.
Mind
into
breathing.
Itare,
itare.
Itare cha.
Itare cha.
Other senses also.
Other senses also.
Tam,
tam.
Into that.
Into that.
Mrityau,
mrityau.
Into death.
Into death.
Apanam,
apanam.
Breathing.
Breathing.
Saudsaragam,
saudsaragam.
With all dedication.
Tam,
that.
Panchatve,
into the body made of five elements.
Into the body made of five elements.
He, certainly. Ajohavit. Amalgamated it. Amalgamated it. Bacham. Okay, translation. Then he amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind, and the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into the embodiment of the five elements, and his body into death. Then as pure self, he became free from the material conception of life. Maharaj Yudhishthira, like his brother Arjuna, began to concentrate and gradually became free from all material bondage. First he concentrated all the actions of the senses and amalgamated them into the mind. Or in other words, he turned his mind toward the transcendental service of the Lord. He prayed that since all material activities are performed by the mind in terms of actions and reactions of the material senses, and since he was going back to Godhead, the mind would wind up its material activities and be turned towards the transcendental service to the Lord. There was no longer a need for material activities. Actually, the activities of the mind cannot be stopped, for they are the reflection of the eternal soul. But the quality of the activities can be changed from matter to the transcendental service of the Lord. The material color of the mind is changed when one washes it from contaminations of life breathing, and thereby frees it from the contamination of repeated births and death, and situates it in pure spiritual life. All is manifested by the temporary embodiment of the material body, which is a production of the mind at the time of death. And if the mind is purified by practice of transcendental loving service to the Lord, and is constantly engaged in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, there is no more chance of the mind's producing another material body after death. It will be freed from absorption and material contamination. The pure soul will be able to return home back to Godhead. And the verse again. Vacham juhava manasi tat prani adhichatam nidvava panam sat sarvam tam panchatvehi ajohavit. Translation. Then he amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind, and the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into the embodiment of the five elements, and his body into death. Then as pure self he became free from the material conception of life. So we're hearing here from Maharaj Yudhishthira, no? From the way that Maharaj Yudhishthira left this world. So this is very interesting, how systematically he was withdrawing himself from the material existence, going back to Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada explains here the purport that he speaks about the mind, how important the mind is in all our activities. Whatever the mind is engaged with, that's where we are carried to. I remember Srila Prabhupada once explained that we can practically achieve anything if we just fix the mind. It all depends on our determination. Just like we see over here from the Shastra, that for in bygone ages people were more determined. They were able to fix their mind more forcefully. There is also one very nice explanation that Prabhupada gives in one purport of the Bhagavatam. As far as I remember, he says that when the senses are controlled under rules and regulations, then the mind becomes steady. And when the mind becomes steady, that means we're able to concentrate properly. And if we don't, if we're not regulating the activities of our senses, then the mind naturally becomes disturbed. And then Srila Prabhupada says, when the mind is disturbed, then we become unproductive in spiritual life. So it's very important, not only for spiritual life, but actually in all our activities, we have to learn how to fix our mind. So mind is very restless, very difficult to control. But if we are regulating the senses by the indications of the Shastras, then actually the mind becomes more peaceful. We can fix our mind more easily. We can concentrate better. It's very difficult normally for people in the material world to fix their minds on Krishna. Or to fix their minds on spiritual subject matters. The concentration is very short. Normally when we talk about Krishna to people, it might be very interesting in the beginning, but after a while they just can't concentrate anymore on that thing. Their mind just pushes them to other things. And we can also see it in our own practice when we try to fix our mind on Krishna. For example, we try to read a book, or we try to fix our minds on hearing about Krishna, like in classes. It's very difficult to fix the mind, maintain it fixed. It's very easy to wander off or to fall asleep. That's another symptom, that you can't fix the mind properly. So the mind is very important. Actually, it says in the Bhagavad Gita that when the mind is controlled, that it becomes our best friend. And when the mind is not controlled, it can become our worst enemy. That means if the mind is controlled, that means the activities of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing. Just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Manmana, fix your mind on me. Think always of me. Then everything becomes suspicious. Anyway, so more thinking than feeling. It says that the mind is like the internal sixth sense, where all our sense perceptions are registered. How you say it's like a kind of archive, where all our impressions from the senses are registered, kept. So the mind is actually registering all our perceptions. And then also wishing or desiring is also an activity of the mind. And actually Srila Prabhupada explains it very nicely that we cannot stop the mind or can't thinking or wishing for a second. The mind is always active, even in dreams. We are always active. We might appear very peacefully externally, but internally the mind is always active. It cannot be stopped. So in the same way we can also not stop desiring. What the impersonalists are trying to do, based on their understanding that their whole miserable existence has started with material desires, and they try to stop all kinds of desires. But that's not the process. That's not how we actually achieve perfection, or peace, constant peace, real peace. But it requires that actually we purify our tears, we purify our thinking, feeling, and willing, just like there's a very nice verse. What was the verse again? Anyway, I just remember the last line. The first line was Mukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakali Ashanti. Did I say the first line? Somebody knows this verse. But no, the translation says more or less, you know the verse? No. So it says, the translation goes that it actually starts, no, the translation actually probably normally starts with the second line. He says that bhukti kamis, those who are anxious for fruit of results and to enjoy them, no, the bhukti kamis, or kamis, and also the mukti kamis, also aspiring for liberation. And the city karmis, those who aspire for mystic powers, they're all ashant. Ashanta means they're all disturbed. They're never actually completely satisfied. They always want more and more and more. They never come to an end or to a conclusion. They always want more and more sense gratification. Or more and more. And then it says that only the devotees, only the devotees who have become free from all desires, they actually achieve peace. No, that means, like Prabhupada has explained many times, it doesn't mean that the devotee doesn't have any desires, but rather means that his desires become purified. No desirelessness in Krishna consciousness means that we have no selfish desires. So that's a very high platform. But the more we advance in Krishna consciousness, and the more we dovetail all our activities with Krishna, the more we actually enjoy being servants of Krishna. We actually experience a higher kind of sense of a higher taste. Not by just repressing the senses, but actually occupying the senses in the service of Krishna. Not just like we are singing and dancing and all this. No, what do people do normally when they want to enjoy? They want to sing and dance and eat good food and all that. So actually, Sri Prabhupada used to say that Krishna consciousness is a feast, a festival, every day. And it's true. We get up in the morning, if we have a little enthusiasm, determination to get up in the morning early, actually the Mangalarti is a very blissful activity. Isn't it? So nice. It's actually sense gratification. But it's spiritual sense gratification. All to see the deities, Gonitai, they're so nice. But of course it requires a little purification. It requires that one surrenders to the deities. It requires that one surrenders to Krishna to actually appreciate, because Krishna reciprocates to the devotee, to the degree that one surrenders. That's what Krishna also confirms in the Bhagavad Gita. He gives everything, he rewards the devotee according to his surrender. That if we remain like a block or like a stone, a piece of wood, then Krishna also relates to us in the same way. And the deities become just two pieces of I don't want to call it an offensive, but they just some statues made of metal and some clothes put on them. But when actually one is enlivened in Krishna consciousness in devotional service, then these deities actually reciprocate and they become more and more beautiful. And actually, like Prabhupada says, that the more we decorate the deity, the more we do nice things for the deity, the more we also become decorated. The more we also become nice. And there's a nice example that Prabhupada needs to give with a mirror. When you decorate an object in the mirror, some object, automatically also reflection is also decorated. In the same way, Prabhupada used to say that we also reflections of Krishna, parts of Krishna. And if we do something nice for Krishna, and if we decorate Krishna nicely, then automatically we also become adorned. So if we are worshipping the deities properly, then actually they become more and more. How do you say? They reciprocate more and more. And actually, Prabhupada used to say the deities should be so nice, especially when we worship Radha Krishna, we have some more elaborate deity worship. Prabhupada used to say that Srimati Radharani should be so beautiful that all the brahmacharis, when they go on the street distributing books, when they meet a nice girl, nice lady, they would always think, compared with Radharani, she's nothing. Of course, we do not know Radharani, we do not know the deities, we never seen these beautiful forms of the deities, and we can understand this. But just like in Hungary, you have very nice deities, you just brought me some photos of the deities. They're so incredibly nice. You can see the devotion, the bhakti of the devotees and those deities. How effulgent these deities are, how beautiful they are. So actually, this is Sanskrit vacation. Or we eat feast, prasadam. That's what everyone can improve. Even people who have not much Krishna, who are not very much Krishna conscious, they also start appreciating prasad, or the music, these sound vibrations. It's so beautiful, especially when the devotees are singing very sincerely. There's different modes. Kirtan should be sung for the pleasure of the spiritual master and Krishna, and not for my own prestige, not to impress some lady or some man with my voice, and with my ability to play and sing and all that. Depending on the devotion of the devotee, when they sing for Krishna, naturally it becomes attractive. Even if there might be so many imperfections, technical aspect of the music, of the chanting, if there's devotion, pure devotion, naturally becomes attractive. And everything related to devotional service is actually sense gratification. But we should not be interested. We can actually not live without occupying our senses and our mind. But we should not be interested in 10th class, 10th or 20th class, a kind of sense gratification. The first class sense gratification is when Krishna is pleased. When we actually occupy our senses completely in the service of Krishna. Just like Prabhupada used to say, give this example, when you water the roots of a tree, automatically also all the different parts of the trees, the tree becomes satisfied. So to the degree that the devotee satisfies Krishna, automatically the devotee is also satisfied. And there's no greater satisfaction than to please Krishna. All these pleasures that we experience in the material world, they're actually, in the sastras, they're compared to reflections. This is because the material world is actually nothing else but a reflection of the spiritual world. It is a shadow manifestation. Just like the shadow. The shadow does not have any, in itself doesn't have any substance. But the shadow is projected from some substance. And the shadow moves according to the movements of the substance. In the same way, the Shastras say the material world is just as a shadow world. And what makes this material world move are the spiritual parts of Krishna. And the ultimate is actually Krishna who's moving everything. Behind the scene, he's actually the supreme controller. So the important thing is not matter, but the important thing is the substance. Is a spirit soul. And how many times have we heard that we should be more preoccupied for the well-being of the spirit soul than the body? Our whole misery is based on this misconception. That we think that we are this body and that the purpose of life is to to gratify the senses independently. Control and enjoy independent from Krishna. The more we, the more we go away from Krishna, the more we become entangled, entrapped in the complexity of the material nature. And the more we go to the light, or go to Krishna, the more our problems on material existence are solved, one by one, gradually. Just like it's explained here, how Yudhishthira Maharaj became completely absorbed in his eternal relationship with Krishna, completely absorbed. And in this way he was able to get rid of all these material entanglements. So in bygone ages, processes for achieving this end were different than nowadays. When you read these descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam, it might be very difficult to understand all this. And also not only understand this, but also to practice, put this into practice. Why? Because nowadays we are not as we're not as qualified as in bygone ages. We hear, for example, about the austerities of these great personalities, how they renounce. I just heard a class where Srila Prabhupada was explaining the six opulences. And then he speaks about renunciation as an opulence. And then Prabhupada gives a very nice example. He says, a description, And he says, renunciation means that I have so many opulences, so much money, position, all that, and I give it up without attachment. Just like, and then he gives examples of, he says in Vedic culture this was common, very common, for exalted personalities like kings and brahmanas and educated people, and that they would be able to renounce. And then he gives a long list of great kings who renounced all their opulences. So we can't even imagine what that means. If we simply lose something, we lose our watch, or we lose something, we become so, overwhelmed with grief, and anger, or we're so proud of, somebody becomes, is very beautiful, and all of a sudden all kind of pimples come and appear in his face, or something like that. Or it's so nice, he has so much hair and everything. And all of a sudden, for some problem, he loses all the hair. So this is this is very, very, very miserable. And Prabhupada says, we attach to so little things, insignificant things. But if we compare this to the great personalities who are described in the Bhagavatam, just like Parikshit Maharaj and others, they had unlimited facilities for Sanskrit education, unlimited opulences. They were honored all over the three worlds, more or less, by great personalities. No, and to renounce all that is very, very difficult. Because normally in the material world, the more you have, the more you become attached. And the more difficult it becomes to renounce. Just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita at one point, where he's like teasing Arjuna. He tells him, oh Arjuna, for somebody who's been honored in this world, dishonor is worse than death. This was one of the very first arguments that Krishna presented to Arjuna, to encourage him to carry on with his responsibilities and not to give up. It's actually very material, material argument. But Krishna is first presenting all these simple points until he becomes more philosophical, he goes more into this, deeper into the subject matter. But in the beginning he simply says, oh Arjuna, if you don't comply with your responsibilities, with your duties, then everyone will look very bad at you. Why does Krishna say this? Because it's true. In the material world, the more we become honored, the more we become big in some capacity, naturally we become attached. And if this thing is taken away, we suffer. So we cannot imagine what it means, to renounce in the style that the famous kings in Vedic culture renounced everything. So renunciation is possible only if we become attached to Krishna. More and more attached to Krishna. Then naturally all these qualities develop, like detachment, also illumination, knowledge, and so many good qualities manifest. That's why the Bhagavatam says that if somebody is not a devotee, he might have so many qualities, important qualities, but all these qualities are just superficial. They're only on the surface. They're not deep. And that's why they have no value. Whereas when somebody develops his bhakti lata, his creeper of devotional service, the more he waters the creeper, the more it grows, the stronger it becomes. Naturally it brings out some fruit, brings some, some symptoms become manifest. And all the bad qualities, more and more disappear. So that's why we are not so much concerned about all these technicalities of the yogis and all that. It's not practical for us. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us a simple process of devotional service, based on the chanting of the holy names. We are already having so many problems following the simple rules and regulations, like the four rules and regulations. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat-eating, and no drug abuse, and no gambling. There are many parts in his letters, in his books, Prabhupada said, if we just follow these four regulations and chant 16 rounds minimum, our advancement in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. It always burns, boils down to these very, very basic, simple things. If we just do these things, then things become easy. But as long as we don't, we always like kind of hovering on that. There's always so many problems. So that's why Prabhupada, in many letters that he wrote to disciples, when you look at the letter book, the compilation of Prabhupada's letters. Many letters Prabhupada ends sentence. He says, please follow the four regulative principles very strictly and chant your 16 rounds every day without fail. And sometimes he adds something else. He says, in this way, You will always have the strength to go on in Krishna consciousness. And this way you will always be enthusiastic, inspired, just like Sutra Maharaj. And was it in class that he said? When we were talking downstairs. He said that he was referring to a verse from the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sojatina Kamishati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Vatpatimna Vatiparam. The first part it says, when one becomes liberated, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana means one becomes happy. Naturally, when devotees are strictly following the process of devotional service, they become joyful. If they always go around with a face like that, and they had so many problems in their mind, that means they're not properly executing devotional service. Because naturally, when you do it proper, you become joyful. You become happy. And that's, but it's, if it's not done properly, then you can't experience it. Naturally, when one does that and is occupied in devotional service seriously, he becomes happy, satisfied. Now somebody might say, but that's not really, that's not really true. Just see how many devotees have had problems. Well, it just shows that it's true. It's a reverse. Srila Prabhupada used to say that Krishna consciousness is a great science. Devotional service is a great science. And you obtain one result. If you do it properly, you get one result. And if you don't do it properly, then you get another result. Whatever you invest, you get. When there's problems, it just shows that this science actually works. That you can't just do it with your, with your left hand, as it says in German, with links. But you have to actually do it properly. You have to absorb yourself the more, most possible. Especially you have to follow the rules and regulations, and you chant nice rounds. There's one letter that Prabhupada wrote once to an initiated disciple, and he was saying, please chant 16 good rounds. And then he was going through the description of devotion of the practices. He was mentioning Mangalarti and different things. And then he says, now if you don't, then he ended with chanting 16 good rounds. And he said, if you don't do that, no question. If you don't do that, then there's no question of spiritual life. What does spiritual life actually mean? Spiritual life does not mean that we just put on some tila, that we just put up some dhoti and some kapuzenjacke, die ISKCON uniform. That is actually not the high side. These things are not the real essence. Like Prabhupada said many times, there has to be actually a change of heart. Change of heart means that actually, instead of thinking of oneself all the time, one has to actually come to the point of surrender to Krishna. Just like it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a very nice prayer where it says, I don't know all the words, but it says that. Actually, it's not a prayer. It's just a description about faith. It says that. I don't remember all the words, but it says more or less. It says that from now, O Krishna, from now on, I'm yours. And with this faith, equipped with this faith. In Krishna consciousness, understanding that if I turn to Krishna and I surrender to Krishna, I will be protected. I will be maintained and protected. This is What am I saying? No, Chaitanya Charitamrita defines that as faith. No, if we have this faith that actually Krishna is my Lord, Krishna is the one who maintains me and protects me, then Krishna consciousness becomes, when this change of heart actually turns, takes place, then actually Krishna guards the devotee. He starts protecting him, giving him facilities, more and more facilities and devotional service. Most of all, like it says in the Bhagavad, he gives him the intelligence or the vision to become, or see more and more things, more and more related to Krishna, become more and more Krishna conscious. A devotee, he sees everything related to Krishna. Whatever good things happen to him, as well as what bad things happen to him. Whatever happens is ultimately under the control of the Supreme Controller, the Supreme Person of God. And that's actually what Krishna consciousness means. Whereas somebody who is not Krishna conscious sees everything separate. Just like in the material world, somebody has a little success, he thinks that this success is due to me. And he becomes very proud. And when there is some reverse situation that one actually has to suffer or he loses something like that, then normally we have the tendency to look for the reason or for the cause of this in others. A devotee, a Krishna conscious person doesn't look like that. First of all, even when some problems occur, he experienced some problems from others, a devotee always relates it to Krishna, always first thinks, what is it that Krishna wants to teach me with this? What is it that Krishna wants to show me with this? Why am I put in this situation? What is the cause? What have I done wrong? And if I don't understand why, then at least I have to understand, this is due to my karma. Because in the previous, I must have done something unconscious or conscious sometimes in the past, and that's why this is occurring. That's why I'm experiencing this reverse situation. This is actually important for devotees to develop this understanding. Otherwise, whenever there's a problem, devotees become perturbed, disturbed, they start to commit all kinds of offenses against others. So one should always first look into one's own heart, instead of accusing the rest of the world. So this is actually also an aspect of Krishna consciousness that's very important to develop. If one wants to maintain oneself as a devotee, one has to become humble. There's no way around it. And all the problems that we experience, actually Krishna gives us all these problems so we become more and more tolerant, more and more humble, more and more meek. Because it's the only way how we can advance in Krishna consciousness more and more and more. It's not that there would be, at one point, there would be no more problems. As long as we're in the material world, problems are always there. But a devotee uses his problems to advance further and further and further and further. He sees all these problems and all these apparently conflicting situations as Krishna's tests. Just like in any educational system, there's regular tests, exams that one has to pass, and one passes all these exams and all these tests, and one becomes more and more experienced, more and more knowledgeable, more and more strong. So this is actually how we can see. How every devotee or whatever devotees, even the greatest souls mentioned in the Shastras, they were confronted with incredible problems. If we just imagine, for example, the problem that Arjuna had. Arjuna was in the middle of a battlefield, confronted with so many Kshatriyas, determined Kshatriyas, who had just come to kill him. Not only Kshatriyas, but his own family members. The situation became so intense, so difficult, that Arjuna, who is glorified in the Shastras as a superhuman being, equipped with so many incredible arms and so qualified, that he became completely disheartened. The problem was so great, so intense. But then, because he was very fortunate, so he was able to associate with Krishna, to surrender to Krishna, take a refuge in Krishna, and Krishna gave him all the strength necessary to overcome the problem, or those problems. So he became so powerful, due to this faith that he had in Krishna. As soon as Arjuna surrendered to Krishna, he became so powerful. He was empowered Krishna empowered him with so much energy, spiritual energy, was able to surpass all problems. Just like it says in the Mahabharata, when the battlefield of Kurukshetra was coming to an end, there was nobody left anymore. Practically they were all killed. And only the Pandavas and the very, very few persons remained alive. Everyone was killed. So Arjuna and the Pandavas, they went through all these difficulties. But because they surrendered to Krishna, they didn't forget Krishna for a moment. Krishna will always protect them. Or there's many other examples in the Shastras, many great examples. Here I mentioned only the Pandavas. But the whole Bhagavatam is full of great personalities. And how these personalities became so great? Because they surrendered to Krishna. In the most adverse situations, they surrendered to Krishna. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, so many great personalities. They experienced so many difficulties, so many problems, but because they surrendered to Krishna, they became great. We should never expect that when we are devotees that there will be no more problems. Actually, the problems become greater and greater and greater. In the long run of our spiritual knowledge, in our spiritual life, Krishna gives us more and more problems to solve. But don't worry. Krishna, Prabhupada explained once that Krishna only gives problems that we can actually overcome. Great devotees experience or are tested in a greater way, in a bigger way than simple devotees. If we would have a problem like Arjuna, we would disappear. We would be completely disheartened. We would lose all faith. We see our devotees, especially the new devotees, sometimes these problems also appear very, very big. But Krishna always gives all the means to solve the problems. That we have, we have some nice association, some nice guidance, we have the nice books of Srila Prabhupada. We have so many problem-solving, tools. So many tools to solve these problems. But of course, if we forget these tools, and we think, due to our false ego, we think that we're so qualified and so incredible that we don't need any help. We can just be on our own. then that's your request. Like everybody's question, after a while, everyone is just moved under, or untergenäht, untergeflügt, from material energy. I don't want to extend it unnecessarily. Maybe some question. I'll be a little bit off the point here, but maybe.
You said that one can only renounce if one has attachment to Krishna. I was thinking, one could say, now I cannot surrender, I cannot give up everything or so much because I don't have so much taste for Krishna. It's not also that this. It goes hand in hand, or I don't
understand. Yeah, and like I'm mentioning, the more you invest, the more you get.
Where's the beginning?
The beginning is that one has some realization, especially in the association of devotees. That's why the association of devotees is so powerful. Just see how the association of Srila Prabhupada in the beginning changed people, how they changed their desires. How they change their lifestyle, their way of thinking, everything, seeing things. The association is so important. When you associate with sincere devotees, then you become most inspired. Even though you might not be very qualified, but you become inspired. That's the power of preaching. That's why the importance of preaching comes in. Because actually by preaching you can change people. You can change. Desires. Isn't it? I hear you always preaching by telephone. Because I'm sitting in that room and every now and then I hear you preaching. Somebody calls in. I don't know what they ask, but you immediately start preaching. Yeah, you to surrender and blah blah blah. Why? Why is preaching so important? Because by preaching we can actually help people to change. No, isn't it? Just by hearing and sitting with the devotees and seeing the devotees, seeing their enthusiasm, their determination, one also becomes inspired. And also when devotees have problems, then we also become influenced. Isn't it? And we also become influenced. Very powerful association, it's very powerful. But if we have good association, we associate regularly with sincere devotees. And this is the best means for us to gain strength, inspiration, determination, everything. Especially if we learn how to please those devotees. We try to please those devotees. Then by the mercy of those devotees we are more and more elevated, we are more and more fixed up. Devotion service. What does, for example, the disciple always want to do? He wants to please his spiritual master. Why? Why does the disciple want to please his spiritual master? Because that satisfaction of the spiritual master gives him so much, satisfaction. So satisfying. Or to see all the devotees pleased with one service, it's very satisfying, isn't it? And when this becomes inspired like that, that gives one so much determination. One becomes so determined. Why? Because by the mercy of Krishna, by the mercy of the great souls, one can see things and realize things more and more and more and more. Just by pleasing them, they bless. These blessings are very important in emotional service. We should never underestimate this substance, these blessings of devotees. Very, very important. That's why it's so unfortunate when devotees become disrespectful with devotees. Or they blaspheme them, or they criticize them unnecessarily. Why? Because you just cut yourself off from the supply of blessings. Because the devotees' blessings are so important. We all need the blessings and the well wishes of the devotees. There's nothing worse than to have bad relations with devotees. So heavy on the mind, so heavy on the heart, isn't it? To have bad relationship with somebody, especially a devotee.
Wow.
I don't know if I answered your question. Yeah, but that puts everything into motion. No, the association. No, just like when one is associated with devotees, devotional service becomes much easier. No? Isn't it? Much easier. No, Krishna consciousness becomes so natural. Like we mentioned many times, it becomes an irrevocable fact, devotional service. No one is sitting there alone, you know, or not even associated with devotees, with karmis all the time, you know, then one loses faith. Why? One becomes contaminated. One becomes conditioned. You know? Also, one becomes like, how do you say, anxious, you know, or paranoid. I don't want to show that I'm a devotee. I don't want to show that I'm chanting Hare Krishna. I don't want them to see how I read a book. No. Spiritual book, I put some paper around it so nobody sees what I'm reading. No? And offering the food. Oh, you know. No. I have to do it in the mind. No? Why? Because we become conditioned. Whereas when you're with devotees, then all this becomes natural. No? Making obeisances in the temple. Nobody even looks when you make the obeisances. It's so natural. No? Or when you fold your hands in front of the altar. No? It's just the mood is so devotional that this is all just natural. No? And it will be completely unnatural. Somebody walks in with his big boots, no shoes, walks in the temple, you know, or goes up to the altar, something that becomes becomes a complete rasa basa. Many times when you're in the temple and somebody comes from outside, some handwerker, you know, some worker, someone, you know, and they speak amongst themselves, you know, those vibrations are so different to the vibration they hear amongst the devotees. When I was in Nuremberg just now, you know, and I was sitting in the room and writing, you know, on the computer, you know, there was only him in the temple and he was doing something. And it was so quiet. And then it was then they had a war with some workshop, you know, Handwerksbetrieb, you know. And then there were always two persons working there. You know. They were not there all the time, but they had to do something. I don't know what workshop actually. I think it was a Lagerhalle or something. So, and they were talking amongst them. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but the way they were speaking, you know. The whole mood, they were, you know, the whole mode of relating it to each other was so disturbing. They were just inciting each other, and they were both so frustrated. You know? I don't know what they really, I couldn't imagine how they can live these. Why? Because. As devotees, we're so far away from all this. And we are kind of very fortunate because we can be in such an atmosphere where devotional service is natural. That's why Srila Prabhupada in the beginning insisted so much that all devotees live in the temple. Live together. Why? Because once you live together and you have more association with devotees and you have a regulated program, you advance naturally. Unconsciously you advance in Krishna consciousness. You make advancement very quickly. Just by being in the temple, by hearing, by being with the devotees, by assisting the programs. Even if sometimes the programs maybe some little pushy that one has to be there and little, you know, sometimes maybe some paranoia that one is still sleeping in a sleeping bag, and the mangalarti goes on, you know, on the next floor. You know, one can hear everything. You know, one can hear every word of the songs and everything. And one is, you know, but that's good. This peer pressure is important. Why? Because one just becomes Krishna conscious. Isn't it? And why some people become very disturbed when they see devotees? Because actually they feel pressure. They feel pressure. They feel challenged. Because they have built all their lives on certain principles, certain concepts, certain goals. And when a devotee comes, a devotee is there all of a sudden. He puts all this into question, isn't it? He put all this into question. And especially when they have to deal with devotees. And they see, even the devotee doesn't have all this, and he doesn't care about all what they're caring so much about. He's happy. And he's happier than them. Boy, they become so disturbed. They become so disturbed. And many times they also become angry. How come he's living?
No.
How come this devotee lives?
No.
He eats. And he's happy.
No.
And here I am. I'm working like an ass. And I'm full of problems.
No.
That's why they always say, get married!
No.
Work! No. Get married! Work and all this. In other words, suffer like me. Isn't it? How come? No. He's living in this world which is full of suffering and he's happy. This cannot be, isn't it? Yes. Sorry, it just came out of my... Yeah. Somebody might not agree with this. Now what can you expect of a sannyasi when he starts revealing his mind? Yeah, just like the parents also. They normally also want their children to suffer like them, continue the suffering. They're mostly not happy, but they want, insist that the sons do the same thing, the same thing, the same thing, same suffering. That's why I went to see my parents now, a couple of weeks ago, in Hamburg. And whenever I see them, there's very little chance that I can talk with them about Krishna because they just don't want to hear it. So, and all they tell me is about the suffering of others. How they're suffering, how their family, had this and this happened. How my father had to go to the hospital. Why? All these, it's just like birth, death, old age and disease. What they're talking about. And there's so little enjoyment, so infinite, so... And then then I normally go there and I'm kind of carefree, like the Buddhists are carefree, even though we have nothing, And I'm always kind of jolly, I don't know, and also I'm a very active person, I'm very active. So. And then... Then they say, they don't say it anymore, but they used to say, why don't you become normal, Why don't you become normal? Yeah. This is a problem that many devotees have. They don't want to be normal. They just want to be Krishna conscious. Or natural, when you talk about natural nowadays. Even devotees sometimes talk, Prabhu, be natural. Don't make a show, just be natural. But what does natural actually mean? Like Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, there are three modes of nature. So there's natural means tamaguna, and natural means also rajaguna, and also goodness. And besides this, there's also spiritual nature and material nature. So depending on what nature controls you and what modes of nature controls you, you have a different outlook, different kinds of happiness, different kinds of philosophy, And what is natural for a person in the mood of ignorance is not natural for somebody who is in the mood of passion. Or what is natural for a person in goodness is not natural for a person who is in the mood of ignorance. Or what is natural for liberated soul is not natural for a person under the control of material nature. So what does it mean, natural? How do we want to become natural? Just like Sohotra Swami mentioned yesterday, devotees, first in the material world we have to accept some designation. And then as we advance in carrying out our duties, complying with our duties, then we become more and more, we advance more and more to the spiritual platform. Well, we give up all our designations. That means we are renouncing. Naturally, we renounce. The more one gets something better, then naturally he renounces what is worse. Isn't that natural? Isn't that natural? When you get something better, you renounce something that is not as good? What do you think? Now what can be better than devotional service? What does give us actually better taste than devotional service? But we cannot see this when we don't have good relation with the devotees. That's why I was saying in the beginning that we actually, everything starts with good association. Or with association. We have nice, good association with enthusiastic and sincere devotees. When the fire of devotional service, then naturally we become inspired. Now we also want to do something. I don't know, I explained this answer so much. But maybe there was some reply. Did I reply your question? Any more questions? Or any more? Or any challenge? Yes, but. Yeah?
There is challenge. But what I got last was exactly the opposite of what you said. Somebody told me, look how you and me are suffering. You have so much to do, you don't have enough sleep and this. And since I
You don't have enough sleep?
Since I stepped a little more back from the temple life and this, and live my life like before, only add this much Krishna consciousness to my life, what is possible, I'm completely happy, and the person looks also really happy, and I feel really good, and you should also do it, you ruin your life, and so on. And,
yeah, everyone does what makes one happy. So what makes you think that the life that you lead will make me happy? I'm happy as I am. If somebody's not happy, maybe it's something missing. Yeah, okay. And the ultimate is to everyone wants to become happy, isn't it? If somebody is not happy doing what he does, then he needs maybe some adjustment. So he can more enthusiastically, more freely do his devotional service. Sometimes people need more, more independence to be happy. So there's all these facilities. But when you speak to older devotees, you know, many older devotees who have been in the temple before and all that, brahmachari, brahmacharinis, like that. When they sit together and they're honest, you know, then they always speak about the good times they had. Yeah. You know, but the good times they had when they were, you know, just struggling in the temple, getting up early and all that. Yeah. I just had a meeting with some older devotees in some other part of the world. There was some birthday party, so I went there. And they were all sitting there. And then and after a while, when things become more weniger steif, less formal, one devotee told me, Maharaj, actually, you know, when we were doing Sankirtan, you know, those were the best times that we ever had. You know? And they all, they, you know, through the whole road, they all agreed to say, yeah, that was the best time. You know? Even though they had so many arguments and so much, criticism before. You know? But in the end, they all knew, yeah, actually, you know, unconditional devotional service is the thing that really makes one happy. Yeah. So you might, you know, according to place and circumstances, you might take make some adjustments, but to the degree that one wants to gratify his senses, to the degree he suffers. That's just the law of nature. And to the degree that you surrender to Krishna, you do something for Krishna, you become happy. That's a very simple formula. Now, how to adjust this? Well, that requires intelligence and requires good guidance also. Srila Prabhupada always wanted his householders also to be Krishna conscious. When they didn't have a program, they didn't come to the Pradhanpur program, he wanted to have them to have programs at home. He wanted them to worship deities. He wanted them to make regular programs at home. Did I say anything about that? Many times you see when people dive into this kind of, you know, or start a different life, you know, first they feel it's very nice, you know, because they're still, you know, immer noch mit dem Schwung, you know, wie ein Schwungkraft, no? Immer noch der Schwung vom hingungsvollen Dienst da. But then when they become more and more entangled, they forget more and more about their basics, the basics in spiritual life, they naturally become more and more miserable. In the beginning they might be carefree and they might think that they're okay. But it's a very simple formula. You know, if one doesn't maintain his high saying, doesn't remain humble, and doesn't remain respectful of Krishna consciousness to a certain degree, then Maya just overpowers him, overwhelms him. I don't know, maybe I'm a fanatic. What do you think? Am I a fanatic?
Positive, yes.
That's another thing. An important thing. Yeah. The devotee is always positive. Yeah. One becomes Krishna conscious, one becomes positive. You know, one always sees the good things in it. You know, somebody insults you and say, ugly, stupid. You know? And you take it as Krishna's mercy. Yeah, thank you. I'm very stupid. I'm very ugly. I'm ignorant. That's true. Thank you for reminding me so I become more humble. Or something goes wrong.
with all your, even though you organize everything so expertly, and you just understand, yeah, I'm not the controller, I'm not the manager really. Actually Krishna does it all this. No. Or you get sick, and understand, yeah, that's another way that Krishna is making me humble. And it's showing me how actually this, you know, this body is so miserable. And it's actually nice. The more I try to enjoy the material world, the more I suffer. Actually, the body should, must develop. Well, it's natural for the body to develop a positive outlook. That's why devotees, no, who are well situated, they're always enthusiastic to continue, no matter what. Where does this enthusiasm come from? What do you think? Where does enthusiasm come from?
Well, actually,
taste, realizations. Yeah, what can we do? I don't know, I love every aspect of Krishna consciousness. Every detail, deities, everything. So it's just Prabhupada gave us so much mercy, Every aspect of Krishna consciousness is actually so perfect and so nice, so ecstatic. It says that we are just simply not using it properly and not applying it properly. That's why we have ruined so many things. Just like the father gives him some toys for the child, and the stupid child just breaks all the toys. And if the child is too, very stupid, and he might even accuse the father of not giving him the proper toys, or criticize that the toys are not up to standard. And that's a very unfortunate situation. Actually, everything Prabhupada gave is so perfect. Starting with his books. There's so much in those books. So much information. So much problem solving. There's so much information, material for making us enthusiastic. When you reach that power, the book naturally becomes enthusiastic. Or when you chant good rounds, naturally become enthusiastic. Or when you assist the spiritual program, naturally become enthusiastic. Or when you eat prasad, you become enthusiastic. Isn't it? Unless you eat too much. Or when you have association with enthusiastic devotees, you become enthusiastic. Isn't it? What do you think? Was sagt der Nörgel? What would the Nörgel say? Das ist auch ein Argument heute. Ne? Das ist alles Show. Yeah. But then we come again to natural. Natural. What is natural? What is natural for me is not natural for you. And what is natural for you is not natural for me. I love to be with devotees. I love to see the devotees make obeisances. I love to see the devotees in dhotis and shaved and tilak and the ladies in saris. It's all blissful. And I know that Srila Prabhupada loved it also. Prabhupada even showed his lady disciples, he himself in sannyasi showed the ladies how to put on a sari, can you imagine? Unheard of. Why did he show them to put on a sari? No? If it was not necessary, if it hadn't, it was not important. Just the other day, I went to, in Hamburg, I had to send a fax, and I had to do it myself. So then we were staying at one place in Hamburg, right in the middle of the city. And the couple that we were staying at, they were very paranoid, that they didn't want to show the neighbors that they were Hare Krishnas. So I put on my pants, and I forgot to take off my tilak. So I went down to the copy shop, and I had to make a photocopy also of my personalis once, because it was an important thing. So then somehow I spaced out and left my personalis once in the photocopy machine and left shop. So then I went up to the apartment and sat down. I didn't even notice the personalis was not there anymore. So then I had to send a second fax. So I didn't want to go all this trip again, so I sent him. So he put on his pants, and he also forgot to take off his tilak, So he went into the same shop, and the lady in the shop, when she saw his tilak, immediately she said, "Ah, there was another person with tilak who forgot his Ausweis, Here it is, Just by seeing the tilak, I didn't lose my Ausweis." Anyways, it's just nothing to do really. But by this I noticed how people, even though our tilak was almost washed off, it was after the morning program all that, that how much people, I say, become conscious. When devotees are there, they see a little tea like that, they know, That's why in the beginning, I think I told the story here before, but in the beginning, the first thing that Prabhupada instructed his disciples to do was to put on tilak. Before he showed them how to put another. So he told them, put on tilak. And all the devotees, they walked around with tilak. With their kami clothes, but tilak. And so, why did Prabhupada say, want this? Because when you walk out with tilak, naturally people see your tilak, and sooner or later somebody will ask, what is that? What is this paint on your nose? And then the devotees have to preach. They have to say, yeah, this is this and that, this is a sign of Vishnu, and we also have temples, our body is a temple of Vishnu, so we put these marks on it. So Prabhupada actually wanted the devotees to preach. Because people become aware, they become more and more Krishna conscious by seeing all these things. So it's not artificial, it has a purpose. What do you think? You walk out and people think of Krishna. That's why Chaitanya Charitamrita says, by seeing a Vaishnava one becomes reminded of Krishna. When Srila Prabhupada used to appear somewhere, everyone would become reminded of God, of spiritual life, or the seriousness of spiritual life, just by seeing Srila Prabhupada. I mean, many people would start chanting and say, "Aluk Krishna, Hare Krishna," something like that. And then we become Krishna conscious, to see to some degree. Besides that, in one purpose, Srila Prabhupada explains, I think it's the Bhagavatam, the Prabhupada says that seeing a devotee, especially a pure devotee, creates an image, I say. A very deep impression in the heart that will remain there. We just read some every now and then in our Kong conference about Sankirtan seminar. Some devotees give their, how you say, tell about some Sankirtan leader. And often what they say is that they met somebody who has met the devotees long, long ago. For example, there was some weeks ago, there was a report, some Sankirtan devotee met a lady on the street, and he was offering a book, and that lady told him the story that she had actually seen Srila Prabhupada when she was very small, I say, no? When she was a kind of, you know, almost a baby, because her mother, somehow took her to the temple or something a few times. So, you know, and this impression, you know, of Prabhupada and devotees, and that went very, very, very deep. Anyway, so many examples of that. Good. I think it's too late already, no? It's 9:30. We went way over time. I'm sorry for creating such a disturbance here. Did you understand anything? Yeah?
Some of us cannot understand it.
No. I'm asking because last time I saw her, she didn't speak no English. Yes. No English. There was no communication. We always had to have we were talking like, and unless there was somebody translating, there was no communication. Sometimes she would sit in class and not understand a word.
Ja,
ist halt dann aufgeschrieben, das geht auch immer so. Das ist ein bisschen schade, weil er kam das falsch. Ja, er hat mir dann auch etwas kommentiert und Fragen gestellt. Ja, er war aber da gewesen. Das ist nicht so. Das ist ja gar nicht zu lassen. Ich habe vorher Ich so schade, dass das nicht sagen, dass ich mit dem Kuchen war. Ich bin einfach so. Aber ich weiß nicht. Ja, er hat gesagt, er ist dann jetzt nach Stuttgart gegangen, vor 8 Jahren. Und dann war es halt, wir fliegen dann erzählen. Er ist jetzt in Stuttgart mit seiner Frau und wir reden dann auch mit der Frau. Und da wird er sicherlich dann auch in den Nächsten.
Yeah.
Ja, aber so die Fahrer, die ja immer auf der Fassade hatten, einfach mal so
Ja, die hätte einen Stand haben sollen, wie weiß man.
Ja, das ist so teuer, die Standmieten sind so hoch.
Wie viel?
Ich weiß nicht, der Ruchiram hat das erzählt, dass er in Mannheim also bestimmt 4.000 Euro bezahlt hat oder sowas.
Im letzten Monat?
Ja, ich weiß nicht.
Das kommt auch wieder rein.
Genau. Und darum habe ich schon eine Miete vom Restaurant, die kommt auch nicht rein.
Nee, nee, aber Weihnachtsmarkt steht ja alle von dort, die gehen ja immer schmecken. Da stellt der Kumar noch viel Geld mit Weihnachtsmarkt.
Die haben jetzt gut organisiert, ich meine, wenn man wirklich.
Da muss auch gute Qualität sein. Weil wenn Sachen noch gut bekommen, dann machen sie 5 Schritte weiter.
Nein, das ist nicht so das Problem. Wenn man das Restaurant schon überfordert und wir dann auch wirklich so einen Stand macht, dann müsste man wirklich auch alle Input in den Stand reinsetzen. Das ist wirklich.
Was der bei Gender macht, der bezahlt über die Wurst.
Das hat er zum Beispiel wieder den Schilder von Baxter Wartenhaus mitgenommen von Amt. Den kleinen da drin. Der macht sonst nicht so viel, ne? Aber wenn er da mit ihm rausgeht und die paar Kurvas spielt, dann die stehe ich leider wieder. Wie es geht. Dann hat jemand erzählt, dass ich meine Eltern gefahren bin.
Was für eine Reihe!
Frühstück, schätze mir so eine Schüssel. Exzentrischer Maharaj. Alles, was er macht, speziell. Ich die Devotees alle wundern. Genau gemessen, weil es gibt es nicht. Da wollen die das nicht verschwenden. Aber genau durch die Menge. Zwei Äpfel. Also wenn man es kocht, ne?
Ja.
Bevor man es kocht.
Zyklon und Synonym gesagt, dass viele Geschäfte, die das verkaufen.
Was in Armee gut verkauft wird. Das heißt, keine feste Regel.
Wenn zum Beispiel plötzlich mal irgendwas saure Gurken plötzlich nicht mehr gut verkauft, dann verkaufen sie nur saure Gurken. Wenn man das Tape bekommt, dann verkaufen sie Tape.
Und du kannst mal, wenn man mal vorkommt, ist alles leicht verkauft.
Nee, die ganze Straße.
Und dann wird es mal was Spezielles auf.
Ja, weil einer, gute Geschäfte, also, ne? Machen die anderen nicht mehr. Stammgäste da im Restaurant?
Ja, schon einige, aber es sind auch viele, die noch kommen, also viele von eigenen LKs, die gar nicht mehr kommen, die irgendwie verloren gegangen sind.
Ja.
Schade.
Ja. Warum?
Ja, also viele wissen gar nicht, dass wir überhaupt existieren, dass es ein Restaurant in der Albrechtstraße gibt.
Was heute? Habt ihr schon mal versucht mit Anzeigen und so?
Werbung hat er so gut wie gar nicht gemacht. Ich habe auch gesehen, dass genau daneben indischer Snack ist.
Der war aber schon vorher.
Aber der läuft gut. Die haben aber auch immer geöffnet, das ist auch. Also abends kommen so viele Gäste, die gerne noch essen können, aber die haben halt abends mal geschlossen.
Thank you.
Gerade eben vor ein paar Wochen mal mit jemandem gesprochen. Ich hatte mir erzählt, dass ich mich daran, ich glaube, er hat mich daran, wollte mir mal das war. Und ich dachte mir, wenn Leute zu ihm kommen, die Getränke selbst mitbringen, die wollen sie nicht da verkaufen. Mit Bier und so. Und das alle, und die wurde auch im Restaurant. Das ist auf dem Tempelgelände. Und wie viele die wurde reisen? Haushörner, Leute, die in den Straßen arbeiten. Haben die besten Kunden von mir. Und die ganzen Nachbarn auch. Wie Leute kommen so gehen, das für euch dann?
Oh, das ist total unterschiedlich. Manchmal kommen dann nicht viele, dann ist der Laden innerhalb von wenigen Minuten rappelvoll und dann so voll, dass man es alleine dann nicht schaffen kann. Aber es dauert dann anderthalb Stunden oder so, dann ist es plötzlich wieder ganz leer. Aber es gibt auch Tage, so wie die letzten dreieinhalb, vier Tage, da war es dann so leer, dass gestern, das ging schon wieder einigermaßen, aber die Tage davor war es.
Wie war denn gestern da?
Ich weiß nicht. Ich kann das schlecht schätzen.
50?
Ja, vielleicht ein bisschen mehr.
Ja? Wann sind die Hauptstoßzeit?
Zwischen 12 und 2.
Bevor ich gekommen bin gestern.
Ja, aber gestern also war auch in der Hauptstoßzeit nicht mehr los. Anteil. Deshalb frage ich doch. Ich könnte einfach auch also die Familie, also die dir fragen kommen, was die machen, die jetzt was gemacht haben, die inspiriert sind, auch die da sind. Und aber wir müssen dann wirklich, wenn das klappt, wenn das ist, aber ich muss ja meinen Mann von der Grenze abholen, ich muss unterschreiben, weil es so von mir ist. Das heißt, an dem Sonntag ist Sonntagsfest, am Montag muss man schon auf der polnischen Grenze sein.
Ach so, das ist
heißt, wir würden dann, das ist ein bisschen Montag. Montag früh, wenn es früh losfahren und wir würden dann auskommen, dass wir das wieder alleine machen müssen, dann müssen wir mit Rot und hier sind praktisch mindestens 10 Stunden fahren.
Also wie lange wird es sich freuen? Ich weiß nicht, dass man
also, das sagst du jetzt so. Klar, die freuen sich, wenn ich das gemacht habe, aber ich habe sie schon so oft, so viele gefragt. Also es ist ja nicht, dass ich mich darum reise, dass ich das alles gerne alleine machen möchte. Ich mache das nicht, weil ich weiß nicht, also schon weil es mir Spaß macht, aber nicht, weil alle Schlange stehen und Wirren gehen und ich lasse mich oder so. Ne? Nur allein, um das alles zu organisieren, hat es so lange gedauert, bis ich von jedem Zug habe, um jeden alles genau erklärt habe und es an wirkliche Türen zu machen, dann die heißen Wunder und das, ja, nicht dieses und das sind so viele Sachen. Was jetzt nur allein deshalb war. Ich meine, wenn ich schlafe, ist es nicht so schlimm. Aber jemanden zu finden, nur der Kuchen, der kochen kann, dann machen wir es mit den Tätigs auch. Das heißt, es muss jemand sein, der eingeweiht ist, so ein Tatanga oder Bobo, so alle anderen, die gefragt, die eigentlich, es gibt nicht mehr viele, ne? Die haben keine Zeit.
Ja, jetzt in der langen Zeit ist es natürlich für die Haushalte dann noch schwieriger, weil sie ja dann auch geschafft zu helfen haben.
Das ist halt, es ist immer die Frage, es ist aber nicht die Frage, wenn Größe von jemandem, dann brauchen wir eigentlich ein riesiges Festkommen. Dann können wir auch sagen, okay,